Yes, it is. And it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Alex Simmons, hello, it's Chris Ryan, and we are welcoming everybody to Tell the Damn Story.
I love saying that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have an episode for you. Oh my God, it is all Alex Simmons' time machine. The whole episode. It's fantastic. And you know what?
It's so great. We didn't even change clothes for it.
Well, because that's part of the time machine.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And we needed help for this particular time machine adventure. So we had to turn to the kings of Ohio pulp. Lynch Books, John Rooning, and Jim Beard are back again to help us climb in to the Alex Simmons time machine.
These are the only shirts we own.
Gentlemen, thank you for coming again. Your clothes look fantastic. And we're going to turn it over to Alex and let him take the lead on this one. And I'm going to hold on for dear life.
Okay.
I have been in the Alex Simmons time machine previously. Please keep your hands and feet and other extremities in the car at all times.
Yes. Okay, wow. So here we go. As Chris has already set it up, I love a lot of things from my childhood, even some things that came before my childhood, but I got introduced to during my childhood and growing up years. And a lot of the old films and books and things that you guys are familiar with, some of those things I'm familiar with. But one thing in particular was, and I'll just do this intro rather quickly. I had a dear friend named Tom Doran. We met when we were teenagers. And we had, just like you, Jim and John, we watched the same things. We read the same books and comics. We were excited by the same sort of action figures and story concepts and things like that. And we found a film club in Manhattan with a bunch of other people who were older than us, but they had formed a film club to watch old serials, the old chapter serials by Columbia and Republic. And you get 15 chapters, 13 chapter adventures, with cliffhangers at the end of each one. And we were, I don't know, 17 years old, never seen anything like this. I'd never seen masked heroes or superheroes on film live action before. So they even had Batman and things like that. So we were like totally caught up in it. This was a thrill for us because we were also comic book geeks. Even though these films were made in the 1940s and we're watching them like 20 plus years later and we're enjoying them, we also got to poke fun at them because it had the 1940s and sensibilities about it. And some of it was not very PC in certain respects. And there were other things. So we were poking fun at it, but we were still enjoying a lot of the adventure and the very simple good guy versus bad guy kind of plots with a moral at the end in some way, shape, or form. Over the years, there have been TV shows, there have been some movies and things, and obviously comics and things like that have kept that sort of feel going. But also as society has altered, morphed, changed, shifted, whatever you want to call it, so has our sensibilities, the appeal, the audience appeal, the things that we're looking for in our story and our films and things like that. And I'm wondering, and here comes a big question, I'm wondering, do you feel that these types of tropes, these types of characters, these heroic figures, these action adventure guys or gals who go and they face all kinds of dangers for different reasons, do you feel that they have a place, they still have a place in the society that we're experiencing now? And in particular, I mentioned that because something Chris and I talked about with regard to the new Indiana Jones movie with Harrison Ford, where obviously Indy is old, very old. And there was some very unfavorable critiques of the film, predominantly by people who were in their 20s and 30s. And obviously, Indy's not their hero. But again, is it Indy's not their hero? Or is it just maybe not a place for this kind of material anymore, or these kind of heroic figures or characters? So I'm just curious, what's your thought on that? Is there a place for these kind of heroes or people? Or do you think we're shifting into something different?
God, I hope there is.
Okay. Yeah,
seriously, it's a tough question. I can only speak for myself. I hope there is. I still want to believe in a world where the virtuous character, the one who is thinking of the greater good, is the one who's going to come out on top in the end. It gets a little harder every day to envision a world like that, but I still want to believe in that. And I don't want to get too philosophical about it, but it's a good question. And you raise a good point about the people who are jaded about it are the ones who are too young to remember the first round of Indiana Jones. I was 17 when that first movie came out in 1981. But no, I hope there's still a place for that. Is there? I don't know. The 21st century, to me at least, is a bit of a scary place, but all the more reason why I think there should be a place for heroes like that. I don't know. Jim might feel differently.
No, I'm a great believer in the idea that everything is cyclical. I really believe that given enough time, things will come back around again. And I think that the idea of a sterling hero, although it's not completely dead at this moment, I think it'll come around again, because when you've done everything else and you've taken it to the extreme limit that you can possibly take it, I think it snaps back and you go back, because I think it's happened so many times in history where different ideas, different ways of thinking have come back around. I think a lot about Superman right now. The prevailing theory is that we can't or shouldn't have the big blue Boy Scout of Superman in the movies. He still exists in the comic books for the most part. But I argue against that, because if you want to have a movie or a TV show about somebody that's different and special, why make him like everybody else? Superman should be special because he is that one last guy who will always do what is right. And that makes him, well, unfortunately, these days, that makes him different from just about everybody else. I think that in general, audiences would like a pure Superman as he was, as we knew him. And it's a smaller group of people who are saying, no, we don't want that. And unfortunately, some of those are the heads of studios and things like that. I think if that you just went ahead and were true to the character, that a lot of people would embrace it. I think Star Wars is a really good example of that. Who would have thought that in 1977, in the dark days of 1977, in the gritty, grimy days of
cynical, 1977, cynical days,
yeah, that you would have such a throwback,
yeah,
at Star Wars, where you have literal good and evil,
white and black, literally. Yeah.
There was a little bit of gray in between. Right. But and people embraced it. You know why? Because I think George Lucas knew that at its core, it was still a story that everybody likes to hear. He tapped into all those universal, eternal stories of good versus evil. And I think it's also why then a few years later, Indiana Jones. Let's see, 4 years later, Indiana Jones.
81.
A few years later, it's the same thing. Indiana Jones comes along and it's that rollicking old time adventure. And it wasn't just like my dad's age who loved it. I think people overthink things a lot. And there is still a place for a shining knight on a horse to ride in.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Superman and in that particular scenario, or in using that particular character. One of my favorite, the Superman Action Comic stories was by Kelly. I can't remember his first name, but he wrote What's Wrong with Truth, Justice, and the American Way. And it's a story where Superman takes on this group of super characters who are acting as if they're heroes, and they are killing the villains, wiping them out. And people are cheering. Because like with the Batman Joker thing, every time you capture him and you put him away, he escapes and he kills more people. Why don't you just take him out? So Superman's going, I can't do that. And they're going, yeah, you can. See, here's what we're doing. And look at how all these people are thrilled about it. The press, everybody's crying about it. And Superman keeps going up against them until eventually they say, you know what, Big Blue, we got to take you out because you're in our way. Mm. And it becomes high noon. it's very much a scene from High Noon where he's got to face off against these characters, and he doesn't know if he's strong enough to take all of them on. I think there's four or five of the characters. One in particular is very powerful, but together they're a force. And the story, I'm not going to say where the story goes and ends with that, but I really enjoyed that particular story because I think it speaks to what you're talking about, both of you, in that, yeah, every now and then somebody needs to stand up for, I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do.
Right. You know? The thing about Superman, and I know we don't want to focus, drill down too much on Superman in this conversation because it's about more than that, but to me, the character was not necessarily about all the powers and the abilities, but about making choices. If you wake up on any given day knowing that you can do any damn thing you want physically, what do you choose to do? Do you choose to rob the bank at one end of your street or save the family from the burning house at the other end of your street? You can do anything. What do you choose to do with those abilities? Yeah. And that to me is what always made Superman great. One of the thought about that character and my personal experience, when the first Christopher Reeve Superman movie came out, December of 1978, I was 4 or 5 days shy of my 15th birthday. And I'd been waiting for this thing all year long. And I'm sitting in the theater, and we all know the scene. Lois Lane is falling from a building. She's fallen out of a helicopter. The pilot is unconscious. She's falling. He grabs her in midair. He's got her in one arm. And he plucks the helicopter out of the air with the other arm. And everyone on the ground is cheering. Everyone in the damn theater is cheering, including me. I will tell you, I am almost 60 years old. And I can go find that scene on YouTube. And I still, the hair on the back of my neck still stands up when I watch that scene. It's like a 5 or 6 minute sequence. And it never fails to light the fire under me. And I want to believe that. It's things like that tell me that characters like that, not just Superman, but characters like that,
yeah,
will always have a place in society.
When we look at, you mentioned not wanting to focus on Superman, so we'll shift to a couple of Marvel characters. On one end of the spectrum, you have the Punisher, in the way that particular TV series was done, where he's punishing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Tom Holland as Spider-Man. And I think that there you have a force of vengeance that's really about delivering total justice, i.e. judge, jury, executioner. And then you have this innocent person who's trying to do right and trying to figure out, how do I function as a regular person, and yet I have these special abilities and I have to take on these terrible entities, and I've faced loss. And both of these characters have their faithful audience base.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. I think that's one of those things where I go, okay, there is room for both. And it does speak to a sort of a middle ground of people too, because I know certain people who go, the Punisher's violent, but I like this actor, or I like this particular episode, or I like how these characters are interacting with them, or I like the Daredevil's Punisher crossover. So it's not like they're really enjoying all the brutality, but at the same time, some of the stories are speaking to them.
Didn't the Punisher grew out of that whole idea, like the Dirty Harry and the Charles Bronson characters and everything?
Yeah,
and they say that supposedly those characters were able to gain traction because it was at a point where people were feeling frustrated and said, these are guys that get things done.
Mm-hmm.
They don't wait around for anybody else. They get things done. They take it to the very end, and that's it. Superman swoops in, grabs the bad guy, and then drops him off at police headquarters, and he's done. And then the police let the guy go. And I totally get that. But these things can coexist, and I think a good example of that is Doc Savage and the Shadow. They existed at the exact same time. They were hugely popular, but they were two characters who operated in two very different ways. Literally, the Shadow was two revolvers, blazing revolvers, and he mows down criminals. Doc Savage had a code for the most part. He always let the criminals destroy themselves.
Yeah.
They were essentially Superman and Batman before there was a Superman and Batman.
Definitely.
That's a really good example that, you know, and that was in the Depression. And people did. There were some people who liked the way the Shadow operated, and there was people who liked the way Doc Savage operated. Now, Doc Savage did do a few questionable things, send people to an upstate hospital
for lobotomies,
give them a brain operation, but he meant well. At least he wasn't killing. He wasn't killing the people. He actually, his whole purpose was to put them back into society.
Yeah, as zombies,
as good citizens.
By rearranging their gray matter, right.
But again, when we get to the point where everything is shades of gray, a flash of gold or silver is going to be very welcome. I like the deconstruction of superheroes as much as the next guy. I was there for Watchmen and absolutely loved it. And I reread Watchmen every so often. It's not a big deal, but you know what? It does get tiring. It's like the whole thing about you like ice cream. If you eat it for every single meal, every single day for a month or a year, it just gets to be
exactly too
much and you want something different. And I feel that's what's going to happen. But I also go back to what I said. I think there are more people out there that with a true blue Superman, maybe even Batman or whatever, then they want to admit it because they think that society should not have those kinds of characters. They believe what the studios are telling them or their friends are telling them, and that's really sad. But I think it's just, again, it's a matter of time. We have to wait these things out, and then you get somebody like a George Lucas or a Steven Spielberg who comes along and says, hey, remember all those great old stories, and weren't they really fun? And
let's remember when it was
up,
fun.
Let's dress them up a little differently. Star Wars was a gritty universe, but Luke Skywalker had a heart of gold, and Darth Vader had a twisted machine heart of evil. I think it can work.
Here's another level of that, because I hear what you're saying, and part of that, absolutely, that time of hoping that things come around and all of that is good. But the other thing I wanted to just explore on that is the kids. Because again, different eras, different societal mindsets at the time, something had to be there for the kids to help them get a sense of what are the rules in this world? How do I fit in? What's expected of me? Or what kind of person do I want to be? And to some degree, you had that with your parents, whoever the nurturing environment is that you're coming in. I'm saying, please, nurturing. But whatever the environment is that you're growing up in, so you're supposed to get some of that from there. Maybe you get some of that from the teachers or some other role models in your real life. But then at least I'm going to assume, and I could be wrong, that we also had role models from our fictional material, sure, from definitely. The movies and the comic and that sort of thing. And I know that, you know, as a kid, Batman was my role model. Not that I wanted to, maybe I did actually, on the costume.
And
because that was cool. I never saw myself as Robin. I saw myself as Batman. And you know, that was cool. And also, I liked Superman. I didn't ever try and put a towel around my neck and go out a window, thank goodness. But every now and then you leap off your bed. And if you land well, you're good. And if you don't, you get hurt. But these are some of the characters who said, this is what I, like you were saying, John, these are the choices that I have, and here's what I'm going to do with them. And whereas Bruce Wayne had that traumatic situation, which was told, again, yeah, his parents were killed when he was a kid. He grows up to be someone who wants to protect us against that happening to others. Superman, and again, I think it was a Jeff Loeb story with Batman. It was after, not Dick Grayson, but after Robin was killed. Jason Todd.
When Jason Todd.
So Batman goes through that very depressed, dark period in the storylines for a period of time.
Death in the family.
Yeah, that was, and Superman has Batman in a cornfield in Kansas in daylight. And he says, you fight against the Joker. You fight against the Penguin. This is what I fight for. And I thought, what a great analogy. Yeah, you are a force against evil, but this is what I'm trying to maintain for all concern. And it's two different ways that we approach things, but we've got to try and be whole human beings at the same time.
And both are necessary.
Yeah.
I think both of those approaches to the fight are necessary. So they're like the yin and yang.
Exactly.
What a hero is.
It's about choices and mindset. Right. And again, I look at the material that's being put out now, and I'm just curious again, do you think, because the Marvel movies, maybe the DC movies too, but the Marvel movies, really a lot of hoopla about it. A lot of kids and teens and 20s and 30s are going to see these movies and talking about them, loving them or whatever. But I'm not sure about the younger people having enough material that's fun, that is adventuresome, and maybe sci-fi in terms of looking forward. Maybe one day I want to be a pilot or a spaceman or whatever. I'm not sure whether or not, again, our society is presenting the possibilities, the positive possibilities of life. Yeah. I'm just wondering.
I agree with that. Today, it's mostly, I want to be a celebrity. Not necessarily a celebrity who does good, but literally just a celebrity. Whereas when I was a kid, I had lots of different things. We didn't just have celebrities. We had astronauts. You said it yourself. I wanted to be an astronaut. I just thought that was the thing to be. An explorer, a space explorer. You
Major
know,
Matt.
I was getting it in fiction too. I had Jim Kirk as my fictional space explorer. But yeah, it is totally tougher today because I'm around a lot of people where I work. So I see a cross section of humanity, and it is by and large, humanity is obsessed with being famous. And it doesn't matter how you get to be famous or what kind of a famous person you are. It's literally just to be famous. And that could potentially mean doing something wrong. I think a lot of crime in my city is by young people who say, I want to be known, and I'm going to do whatever it is, whatever it takes to be known. Because we see it, oh, don't do that crime because you're on camera. Oh, no, that's good. I don't care. Nobody wears masks anymore or anything like that. I think that's really changed these days.
I think this kind of speaks to what Jim is saying, and I don't want to go too dark here, but I think the truth of the matter is we are still processing a trauma that we collectively experienced 22 years ago. I think we as a society, we are still working that out. And I think it keeps showing up in different aspects of our culture. And I think it has darkened our perception of what the world is all about and what the future is going to be or what it could be or what it should be. And I know that sounds very pessimistic, but I wonder sometimes if we are still working that out. It's 20 plus years ago, but those are images that have been seared into our consciousness. I had an 8-week-old daughter at home when that happened. And I asked myself, what have we done? And we brought this child into the world, into this. And we had another child a couple years later. And this is the world they know. And to your question about what does this all mean to the young people? I don't know. I'm not looking at the world through their eyes. But my concern sometimes is that the world looks like kind of a scary place through their eyes, because we're all living with this sort of collective PTSD.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know what, John? That reminds me of the end of World War II and how the pulp heroes died off, because it was said that the real horrors that they were seeing in newsreels and hearing on the radio and seeing guys come back from the war with missing limbs or not coming back at all, that just killed these big, larger-than-life characters. Doc Savage became a regular guy. Mm-hmm. Those stories to big Doc Savage fans are very hard to read today because he's almost nothing special. He's literally just a guy. He has emotions. He has fears. He cries. He dates women. The shadow gives up his shadow persona altogether. He's literally just Lamont Cranston criminologist or something like that. And they say it was because of the horrors of the war became all too real and nobody needed or wanted that.
I think the arts in general shifted dramatically after the war because artists didn't know anymore how the hell they could process reality in a post-World War II era. If you look at like the visual arts, abstract painting became very popular because most painters didn't know how to represent reality anymore because it didn't mean the same thing it meant to them 5 or 6 years earlier.
And gentlemen, if we look at kids today, I taught high school for 25 years out of the 30 years I was a teacher. And in those last 10 years or so, more often than not, students would just outright reject the ideals that we grew up on, that the government wasn't looking out for them. The Pledge of Allegiance seemed absurd to them. And part of that, I think there was that big push after 2001, after 9/11, there was a big nationalistic push, and then it faded out and things didn't really get better. There was no answer. And the irony is now they have more information coming at them because they have 24/7 access in their hand, supercomputers in their hand, and they're not processing it. There's no, but in a lot of ways, they're smarter than anyone gives them credit for, and they're more perceptive than anyone gives them credit for. But they're not being, you sat down with a book or you sat down with a TV series or a pile of comic books, and it was something that you digested and lived. If they're not readers, they're getting their information, they're getting their morals, they're getting their legends and myths from entirely different delivery systems. Mm-hmm. Some of them is from gaming, some of it's from TV, a lot of it is from social media in 60-second bites. Mm-hmm. You really can't go into that much depth. So the views they're coming back with, a lot of them are a little more cynical. It's like the end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s, how cynical that era was. Yep. And a lot of them are saying, you guys are arguing and pointing at each other. Did you see yet another hurricane? Did you see another school shooting? They don't see leadership as answering the needs. So they don't know where to put their faith. And it's sad because they could use a Doc Savage. They could use, I think the Marvel movies did some stuff for them. If you remember through the 20, 25 movies, that was the first batch, right? Mm. The biggest applause, the biggest moment of excitement was when Captain America caught Thor's hammer. And he was the pure one, that kind of thing. Relative terms, we can digest and pick that apart if we want to. But it told me that they still want that kind of character. That character that has a deep moral core.
Here's where the conversation gets a little Jungian, and I don't want to go deep dive here, but the archetypes keep coming back.
Yeah.
Generation after generation, century after century. Sometimes it takes a long time. We have in the 20th and 21st century, we have Superman. Several thousand years ago, there was Hercules. Right. We have the Flash. Several thousand years ago, there was Mercury. We as human beings keep coming back to these same ideals. They manifest in different ways in different ages, but
that's why they're archetypes.
But I think we keep coming back to those archetypes because we want to and we need to. So the hope is that at some point we look up again and we say, okay, that's something to aspire to. That represents the best that humanity has to offer.
That brings me back to two things. Two things that I just wanted to, because I think we just did this, and I want to just continue this for a moment. Two things. One, the reason why I ask these questions is because A, as writers, whatever our age is, we're asking the questions, what if? We're asking the questions of how and who and what for what reason. And what stories do we want to tell and what do we want to speak about? And where we come from, how we grew up, what we love, what we hate, what we're confused by, impacts on what we create. So absolutely, that's a mix that hasn't changed. To add to the positive end of this, one of the blessings of my current existence is that I am teaching screenwriting at a film school in New York, which pulls in students from age 15 to 60 from all over the world. And the really reassuring thing that happens is I get with a group of the younger ones, and they are still asking these questions. And some of them have lived through some things that I don't even want to think about. And they're looking for a better way. They're looking for, how do I process that and tell that story so that doesn't happen to somebody else, or so that other people realize they're not alone? As the human beings that we are, I do feel that when we're born, we come in almost as clean slates. There's a certain amount of us that's just whatever we are, there we are. And then it's the things that happen to us that we have to do, we have to deal with as we're growing. And as John said earlier, we have to come to a point where we decide, what choices do I have? What decisions do I need to make? And I think that because I'm seeing, again, 15-agers, 20-somethings, and even 30-somethings asking the right questions as creatives, right? Now, again, because I'm dealing with people who want to be creatives, it allows me not to become jaded. It allows me to understand that, yeah, we still are out there. The kind of people that we are still out there. And they're still asking, and they're looking for, what kind of material do I create now? So part of what I've done is not only introduce them to the things that are current, but I take them back in my time machine. Thank you very much, Chris. I take them back to the films of the 20s, 30s, and 40s, even the Oscar Mugeot and things like that. There were silent films, the Charlie Chaplins, the Buster Keaton. I show them either the best of those things or clips from those things. And what's amazing is when you realize, and I don't know why I would think this, but I did for a period of time, either they wouldn't be able to deal with it or they wouldn't be interested, but I was still going to show it to them. And then you see them, their eyes get huge, like watching Charlie Chaplin do his thing and then realizing he's not just funny, but he's making a statement about society there, about wins and losses, about in the end, I still don't have a dime to my name, but I've got my self-respect. Things like that, when they start to realize that, you see them going in, oh, you know, and I have an idea. And I think that's what we as writers, I hope we are aspiring to, by creating the things that we create, to stimulate and support and validate, not only entertain the people that we want to, but also to speak to those that are coming up behind us and saying, there's room for this. You know, differently, but there's room for this.
You know what I keep hearing when you're talking, Alex, is, and it's something I think about a lot with the writing I do, I keep coming back to the idea of hope. The idea that we're constantly, to me, there's a lot of ways to interpret the words look up in the sky. And I certainly think, yeah, there's something flying up there, sure. But to me, it's also about stop looking at the ground. Just keep looking up. And I just, I find myself often, that's making its way into, and this is not a plug, it makes its way into my Midnight Guardian stories.
That's a plug.
Right? No, it's not. Please, I've tried to create this character where the rest of where the city in general is looking at this guy, thinking, I'm not sure what this guy is about. But the more he's out there, the more I realize he's doing something good, and he's making this a safer place. He's probably taking the law into his own hands. But I feel safer in a time when the world is not a very safe place. Mm. And I think a lot of what the stories we're talking about, whether it's Superman, Indiana Jones, take your pick, Batman, we're talking about some form of hope or another. People needing to know that there is something or someone out there who's looking out for us.
And it needs to be across the greater spectrum of human beings here, because when I watched Endgame and the superhero females had that moment where they struck a pose.
Yeah.
And come on. And then I'm hearing comments after the film was over, people talking about, oh, she didn't do this and she didn't do that. And I'm thinking, Captain Marvel, she didn't take out Thanos, yeah, but she took out a battle cruiser. This one individual flew through something the size of, three times the size of the Empire State Building, right, took it out right, barehanded, right? Mm. Come on, guys, what's your measurement stick here? Really, you know?
Yeah, she didn't win the battle, but she certainly changed the stakes.
Oh, absolutely. And again, that inclusivity and showing the greater spectrum. So there's more than just Wonder Woman now. There's more than just a Black Canary. There's more than just She-Hulk. There's this plethora of people that we have an opportunity to share going forward. And I'm just hoping that, like you said, hope. I'm hoping that the messages, maybe maybe it'll be about a balance, but I'm just hoping the messages don't become weighted in the negative, that there are things we can do. And looking up is aspiration.
But when it does, Alex, I think that's when it's going to swing around again. You know, that as long as we all keep doing what we're doing and planting those little seeds here and there. I was thinking about this while you were all talking, is that it's a war of attrition. We have to wear the negative Nellies down. We have to wear them down over time and watch for a hero. It's going to get to that point again. And yeah, there are those special kids out there, young people or whatever, who do appreciate history, who history is not a dirty word to. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot, but I think they're out there. And if we can keep feeding them some good stuff, it's just going to be a matter of time when they're going to say, hey, this is really cool. And they're going to start talking about it more and more. And then there's also going to be those lightning rods like George Lucas, who in 1977 said, boy, I just really want some good old fun action stories with
heroes.
And in that process, the creator becomes the hero as much as the creation. Yeah. I think it's the image that, you know, on the screen or on the page, but the person who brought that to life, I think is a hero in his or her own right. Yeah. And there's a lot to be said for what they bring to the conversation, not just the character itself.
My hope is that the people who own such characters as Superman, that they get to the point where they say, we've tried a dark Superman. We've tried a story where Superman feels he got backed into a corner and the only way out was to kill his opponent. I almost walked out of the theater at that moment.
Right.
And that they're going to remember what the character is. And they said, we've tried everything else. I think maybe we need to go back to basics. Comic book companies keep doing this over and over again. They say, we're going back to basics. And those of us who have been here all along go, oh, yeah, you think so?
Yeah. Gentlemen, I'll tell you that I'm holding out hope for James Gunn. The stories that he's told with the Guardians, there was a moral core that went through there. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a real strong possibility that Superman's going to be done right with him.
I feel that too, Chris. I really do. I think maybe it's on its way.
I'm hoping,
I hope that people embrace it. Because you know what? For a lot of people, that may be a Superman that they haven't seen.
I think that's what it's going to be.
If you don't know Christopher Reeve, then maybe they'll go, oh. No,
George Reeves either.
For that matter.
I'm not familiar with the actor they've cast as the new Superman, but I am very familiar with the actress, with Rachel Brosnahan, who plays Lois Lane. To me, that is a brilliant piece of casting. She's an actress to consider. So if he turns out to be as good a choice as I think she is, this could really be a turning point for this character, I think.
And I think Gunn has proven really adept at casting for the character, even to the point where you really needed multiple people for Rocket Raccoon, right? You needed the special effects, you needed his brother to be there, but then you need Bradley Cooper to do that voice. And one of the executives was like, what the hell are we paying Bradley Cooper for if we never see his face?
Yeah.
Look at Guardians 3.
Yeah.
That's why. Mm-hmm. And he's earned my respect, James Gunn. I think I'm going to say, yeah, I believe that he'll do the right thing by Superman. And I think we need that kind of thing.
It seems like a moment in time where DC is going to finally stop sitting there saying, let us make sure that we do nothing at all like Marvel does. Let us not duplicate their success. Let us not duplicate the balance of humor and drama that they put in there. Let us not retain the core of the characters, although sometimes the window dressing, you know, may change. That's the secret to Marvel and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is that despite all else, they have retained the core of those characters. Mm-hmm.
I think Marvel has mastered the silver screen, and I think Warner Brothers does much better on the small screen.
I agree. I've always agreed. I've always thought that.
It's a weird dichotomy between the two. But Chris is, I think you're right. It's going to take a Marvel guy to jump ship and sadly leave our beloved Marvel Cinematic Universe and go over. And I've already gotten that hope, that glimmer of hope. James Gunn. People just need to let the guy do his job.
Right.
He's great at telling stories, and he loves these characters. Those are two things that are universal. It's the same thing that why the older folks loved this most current Indiana Jones film, because it was our story. Right. The kids today, they may not be fans of Luke Skywalker, but they do Ahsoka. They connect with her. They connect with the Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. That's the power of Star Wars. It's a generational thing, and they're renewing or speaking to a new generation with a new vocabulary, with new people telling the same basic stories.
Interestingly enough, they love Grogu, and Grogu is being presented to us as a character of pure of heart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So isn't that great? I would like to say I'm not so much for cutesiness, but at least the character has heart. I would hold that up and say, come on, listen, you're not as cynical as you think you are if you love this little green guy. You know, it's a weird, like, spokesperson for hope, but I'll take it
where we get it. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you so much. I know we went in a number of different places, but again, the bottom line here is there does seem to be, if for no other reason than hope, there still seems to be a place for the kind of heroes that we are fond of and that we have created or that we have written about, with the recognition that also the times we're in will affect that, and we'll see where it goes from there.
To paraphrase the late Tina Turner, we do need another hero.
We didn't even get to touch on anime, which may be the modern pulp. I can't make that argument for you.
We'll get a chance to change our clothes this time.
That's right.
We'll have to bring in a
new shirt.
Let's talk when that new Superman movie comes out.
I'd love to do that.
Be all over that.
There's going to be
absolutely
the moment of truth. Justice in the American
way.
Nicely done.
This Cleveland boy will be part of that conversation. I demand it.
Yes. Of course. Guys, thank you for everything.
Folks, thank you.
Let us know what you think. Drop your comments in the comment section. Send us emails, smoke signals, whatever. And Chris, as always, an adventure.
Always an honor to be with you, Alex. And of course,
with
the Kings of Ohio, right here. It's a big honor.
Thank you.
I'm proud. Right.